And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Requires Gemini device and additional paid subscriptions to watch Netflix and other third-party apps. Terms and restrictions apply.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 40 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. That's where I post all of my newest work, whether it be these shows, any articles that I write, updates to my Patreon. You guys can keep up with all of that by following me over at JoeOrico99. Like I mentioned, we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. It is the fastest growing app within the fantasy industry, and it's very easy to see why. It's a very easy to use app, a lot of fun games at your disposal as well. If you have never used it before, there's a link within the description of the episode. You click on that, use my code Joe99, and you will get access to a special pick and a deposit offer of up to $250 in bonus cash on that first deposit. So make sure you guys are checking out everything Underdog has to offer. There is a lot of fun you can have over on that site. But today we are going to be breaking down Tuesday's slate, talking about the big things that stood out to me. Later on in the day, we are going to be talking, of course, about the most added and dropped players. But there was a trade this morning, so let's start off with that. Aaron Civale is a member of the Milwaukee Brewers. This one, I think the first thing that really comes to mind is, man, did Tampa ever screw up giving away Kyle Manzardo for what was essentially like a half a season worth of Civale, a little bit more than half a season worth of Aaron Civale in total, of pretty bad production, honestly. Like, Aaron Civale's time in Tampa was a 5.17 ERA with a 1.37 whip. It was really not that great. It was close to a full season worth of games, I guess, 27 starts, 132 innings, but I think it's very easy for me to call this one a miss for Tampa. Down the stretch last year, they acquired him. He had a 5.36 ERA over his 10 starts. This year, it was 5.07 over his 17 starts. They gave away Kyle Manzardo for him, who, granted, has struggled, but that was like the classic real-life buy-low, sell-high type of deal when Manzardo was having a tough year. We know we've talked about that on this show before. His mom was going through some kind of illness, and his production really suffered, as you can obviously expect to happen when you have a close family member going through an illness. And he's really bounced back in AAA this season. I know that his small cup of coffee at the big league level has not been great so far. His 87 plate appearances have not been so great, but I think this was a resounding win for the Guardians, looking back on it now, but a year later. In terms of Civale's fantasy value, I don't think he's as bad as a 5.07 ERA suggests, but I don't think he's really doing much for you. Unless you're playing in a 15-team league, if you're playing NFBC leagues, now if you're playing NL only, he's going to enter the player pool. There is some value there. But at the end of the day, we're not talking about a guy who has a ton of strikeout upside. It's a 22% K rate for the career, and it's 22% this season. I think that he can be maybe a serviceable back-end guy in a deeper league who gives you like a low fours type of ERA. He's very mediocre. I think real life, he's pretty mediocre. Fantasy, he's just whatever. Now, there may be some more win opportunities pitching for a better team in Milwaukee than in Tampa, but it's really a negligible difference there, considering what he's been giving you for a while now. That first half of 2022, the first half of last season was really excellent for him, but he was kind of outperforming his advanced numbers. The strikeouts still weren't there last season. It's just, I don't really get the appeal of Aaron Civale. Now, for the Brewers trading for him, they traded a high A prospect. Okay, that's really nothing. So I understand it from that perspective. But If you're looking at this as like a chance for Aaron Civale to really rebound his fantasy season, I guess it's possible. You change locations, you never know what's really going to happen. But I think the best case scenario is that he's maybe a streamable guy in the 12-team league. I don't think there's a situation, unless it's a really deep 12-teamer where there's large benches or large rosters, whatever. I don't think he's really cutting it in standard size formats. I think Aaron Civale is definitely more on the deeper league side of things. Unless something really drastically changes, but based on what we've seen so far this year, I'm just really not that interested in picking him up or really showing much interest in Civale. If you're still holding on to him and it's a shallow league, I guess maybe see how he does in the first couple of outings, but I don't really think there's really a lot here with Aaron Civale. But let's start breaking down the Tuesday slate, and we'll start with Luis Gil, who had his third consecutive stinker. This one came against the Reds. 4 innings, 2 hits, 4 earned runs with 3 strikeouts and 3 walks. 28% CSW, 8.4% swinging strike rate. I think he's hit that wall. It does appear that Luis Gil is kind of running out of gas a little bit. Command has been an issue this season. It was dreadful to start the year. It got a little bit better. But now in each of these last 3 starts, it's fewer than 60% strikes in each of them. I really think the Yankees are pushing things. I think the way that they should be doing it, and granted, the Yankees pitching is maybe a little bit in flux. Rodon's been iffy. I know that Cole's got the injury potential. Clark Schmidt's out. So they're not quite as flush as they were to start the season. But the way I hear people talk about Luis Gil, not everybody, because there are differing opinions, but some people think, yeah, it's a bad couple starts and he'll end up being fine. Once you're getting into this uncharted territory for innings, it's hard to say that things are necessarily going to be fine, especially coming off of Tommy John surgery, especially the fact that he was really outperforming his ERA estimators, his advanced metrics. A 216 BABIP, I mean, it's still 216. It's been coming up a little bit. It wasn't like the 180s, but that's something that's obviously going to course correct over time, and we started to see that a little bit, as well as the command. The command has been a problem this season. It's a 13% walk rate. I mean, he strikes out enough batters that it's not a massive, massive concern, but I think Luis Gil's fantasy run in 2024 is likely done. Maybe we see a couple more decent starts from him, but I think what the Yankees are likely going to do is send him down to AAA or put him in the pen before he ends up hurting himself here in one way or another. I don't think that he's much of a fantasy asset for the rest of the season. Dynasty is a different story, but I think redraft managers, you're looking at that still very solid 3.41 ERA, 1.13 whip, and you say, I need to get off of him. He's still been very solid. It's a couple of bad outings, and you try and acquire somebody more stable for him because there's no stability here whatsoever. Between the innings potential, and not even potential, like he will have to stop pitching at some point. The guy threw 4 innings last season. To go up to 150, 160 would be really irresponsible. So that's going to happen at some point, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's a month from now. Luis Gil's fantasy value is very much on a short leash, and there's a chance that it's just done. That might sound a little extreme, but in terms of most of you guys in those shallow 10 and 12-team leagues, I don't think we're going to see a lot down the stretch that's going to really move the needle for you so much, especially if you're in a head-to-head league. You've got that great production from him for the first half of the season, and you're probably sitting in a decent spot, assuming everything else went all right, which it's hard to assume that in 2024. But I don't think, you know, these last couple months of the season, we're going to see Gil go in 6 innings, striking out 10, 11 batters like we did earlier on. If the Yankees are smart, and, you know, as much as being a Jays fan, I don't like to admit it, but the Yankees are a fairly smart team. I don't think that they're going to just beat the brakes off of Gil this season and say, you know what, we'll see if he can last. We'll hope he lasts. Especially in the current climate of Major League Baseball, I think what they're likely to do is slowly ramp him down over the next few weeks, have him appear in relief, and then over the last couple weeks of August, first weeks of September, they ramp him back up into a starter, and while he's still exceeding his total career innings, his innings high in a season, which at this point is 96. It's a little bit higher than that, actually. It's 107 or so in 2021, but we are talking about Tommy John surgery happening between then. We're talking about 25 innings in 2022 and only 4 innings last year. So I do think that there is quite a bit of risk here carrying him through the second half of the season because, like a lot of these guys, Ronaldo Lopez is another one that we are going to talk about later. The best of their year is almost certainly behind them at this point. Are they going to be able to keep up? Like, Gil had like a 2 or sub 2 ERA for a while. It was never going to sustain to that degree. And now we've seen it really unravel with all of the with all the potential contributing factors, the regression, the very low BABIP, the injury risk, the shutdown risk, I think it's very prudent to try and get him off your roster before things really, you know, if there's another two or three stinkers and we see that ERA go up into the fours, I don't know that there's going to be really much value in him. But right now, it's still sitting at 341. A lot of people won't look past that. And you say, look, he's been great. He had a couple bad starts. And a lot of people will still see a ton of value in Luis Gil. As far as I see it, I don't think that there's much to see here for the rest of 2024. In Dynasty, it's a different story. He's probably a very solid buy in Dynasty based off of these last couple of outings and people's kind of general skepticism when a new pitcher comes up and is an ace out of the blue. There's a lot to really like with Gil, but there are also a lot of potential roadblocks here in the short term.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about Jose Berríos. Really poor stuff from him against the Astros. It started off pretty well. He did end up getting the victory, but this was five innings, five hits, five earned runs with one strikeout and two walks. A 17% CSW, and I quote swinging strike rates here very regularly on the show, and you don't usually hear me say one that starts with a three. 3.3% swinging strike rate for Jose Berríos. He was the AL pitcher of the month in April, and he was really, truly brilliant, but he's come back down to earth, and the strikeout ability is essentially gone. I mean, Jose Berríos has never been a guy who is going to blow you away with massive strikeout rates or big strikeout numbers. Every now and then, he can get up there and give you a double-digit performance. This season, especially as of late, the strikeouts are just gone. He has a 17.6% strikeout rate this season with an 8.1% swinging strike rate, and if you look back over the last few outings, yeah, he did strike out eight against the Yankees two starts ago. Other than that, 1-3-1-4-2 over those other five outings. It's not great. You also look at the fact that he's been kind of lucky to some extent, like the 248 BABIP, the 83% left on base. He is way outperforming his estimators. He has a 444 Sierra, 448 xFIP. It's like a run higher than that 363 ERA. He's given up a lot of homers this season. I just don't think there's a lot of value with Jose Berríos. You also look at the fact that there's an awful team behind him. Toronto sucks. I know I've been going on about that this season as a Blue Jay fan, but they really do suck. There's an argument that the Blue Jays are a bottom five team in baseball. I don't know that Berríos is going to have a hell of a lot of win opportunities either down the stretch. I think he's very lucky to have eight in 18 starts, honestly. Like most pitchers this year, have really struggled to come by wins based on pens, based on bad offenses. The fact that he has 8 in 18 starts is really good, but I don't think we're going to see that double. Like, you can't just look at that and extrapolate and say, Berríos has probably given me 16 wins this year. I'd be surprised if it's more than 11 or 12, and I do think if you're talking standard size roster, 12-team league, I think Berríos, this might be considered a hot take, I think he's more of a streamer than a must-roster player. I think that what he does is all right, but if you're talking about tough matchups like yesterday, I started him in a couple of leagues yesterday very foolishly and then realized after the fact, why did I do that? Why did I put him up against Houston? It's a tough offense. Berríos hasn't been striking guys out. Overall has been fairly mediocre as of late. I honestly think that if you are in a 12-team league, especially if it's a standard size roster, like an ESPN standard 12-teamer, Yahoo standard size, once you start expanding and adding pitcher spots and bench spaces, it definitely changes the equation. But I think if you are in a standard league, Berríos, outside of 15-teamers and AL only, is somebody that should be treated as more of a streamer than a must-roster player. I alluded to him before. Let's talk about Reynaldo Lopez. 4 1/3, 4 hits, 2 earned runs with 6 strikeouts, but he did walk 4 batters again. This is the second consecutive outing with 4 walks. He did have a 30% CSW and a nearly 11% swinging strike rate, but it does feel like we are kind of approaching the end of this run for Reynaldo Lopez. Again, it's the innings are a definite part of it. It's similar to what we're talking about with Luis Gil, but also the fact that he has stranded 88% of base runners. You know, with that 183 ERA, I know it sounds like really super basic analysis, but you see that it's not going to last. If the pitcher's name is not Jacob deGrom, or it's not Spencer Strider, or potentially Paul Skeens over the next couple of years, if you see a guy running a sub-2 ERA, almost always trade that guy, unless it's maybe like a Glasnow or a Wheeler or one of those elite pitchers, a Scooble, whoever. If you're seeing guys who are kind of coming out of the blue, coming out of nowhere, and giving you this kind of production, especially for this long, I don't think you can look at it and say that's just who he is, especially when you look at the underlying numbers of a 9% walk rate. Like I mentioned, that really high strand rate, nearly 88%. He's giving up a 10% barrel rate, 43% hard hit. I think we've seen the best of Reynaldo Lopez. In these last couple outings, maybe it's too much to like panic over them, but 4 walks in each of them is pretty severe stuff. It's just been a miracle run for him that I can't see continuing. He hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs in any start this season. He started 15 games, and he's only allowed 3 earned runs. I think it's, was it once, twice? It's literally once where it was 3 earned runs, and every other start is 1-0 or 2 in a couple of cases. He's been brilliant, and I just don't think you can run pure for so long. Then you add in the fact that he's at 83 innings. The last time he exceeded 100 innings was 5 years ago. Is he fully built up that he can just pitch the entire second half? Maybe. Maybe he gets to 150 innings or so, but what are those innings going to look like down the stretch? I think we really have seen the best of Reylo. If you're looking at rest of season projections, it's anywhere from a 3.5 to a 4 ERA with decent 24-25% strikeout rate, better than decent, but it is offset by that pretty high walk rate that he is allowing, 9.2%. It was 12% last year. I think that if we are looking at him as a whole, it's best to take the production we've gotten so far, which is first-round type of player, essentially, and try and bank that into something where you need speed, you need power, I need runs, whatever it is, I need saves. I think you can turn Reylo into pretty much whatever you want right now if you are still rostering him. You are, unless you've traded off of him, no one's dropped him or anything. But if you are, if you didn't sell on him before, if you are still holding on to him, I would really look at what you need and think, okay, this is just unlikely to continue, at least at this pace. Could he maybe be a serviceable starter and give you like a high threes type of ERA? I think he could, and there's good win context, but we've talked about this with a few different players. You see a guy reach a peak in value, and it is like trading stocks, essentially. Like, you see something reach a peak that it shouldn't be at, and it's probably not likely to stay at that point, then it's usually a good idea to explore what you can get if you're selling or trading that asset. And I think it's no different with guys like Reynaldo Lopez, guys like Luis Gil, even like an Elliot Ramos, who went cold and kind of picked himself up again. You're seeing still kind of like peaks for these guys. Maybe you're not at the peak with Gil after these last couple starts, but we have been at very high peaks that are unsustainable for a lot of these guys. And if you capitalize on those peaks in the trade market, I think that's how you win in fantasy. I know there's a lot that goes into it, but you see the underperformer and you trade for him, you trade away the overperformers. It really does work out a lot of the time. Is it perfect? Does it always work? No. Sometimes you expect a guy to regress and he doesn't, and he just has a miracle season. a lot of the time, if you're looking at what to expect for these guys who convert from relievers to starters, when there are injury risks, when there are a lot of different mitigating factors, you have to look at a lot of different things, essentially. And with Reynaldo Lopez, with Heal, with a lot of these, even like, I love them, but even like a Garrett Crochet, to some extent like a Jack Flaherty, the value is at a peak. And if you can capitalize on that, it's usually going to work out for you in the long run. Let's talk about Zach Littell. He had a really nice start cut short by the rain yesterday in Kansas City. I think he probably would have been able to go 6 or 7 innings based on the fact that he threw 68 pitches to get through 5 and was really, really good. 5 shutout innings, 4 strikeouts, 4 hits allowed, no walks, with a 34% CSW and an 11.7% swinging strike rate. I really think that Zach Littell is one of the more underrated pitchers, maybe not in real-life baseball, but for fantasy purposes. I still see him on like 25-26% of rosters, despite the fact that he's actually been very, very good this season. It's a 3.94 ERA, which is a little bit high. Those ERA estimators are 3.61, 3.83, and 3.79. He doesn't walk any batters. He has a 4% walk rate, which has led to a really nice 18% strikeout minus walk. There's a lot working for him. I know he's not the flashiest name in the world, but he's very, very consistent. There was a couple of bad outings that he had. It was really the one against Atlanta that led to a lot of drops, but overall, outside of that 6 earned run start, it's been a very, very consistent season for him, and he flies under the radar. I think it's maybe being in Tampa, not the flashiest strikeout guy, but he does a lot of good for you from a fantasy point of view, and I think that he's going to be able to continue at this pace going forward and give you somewhere into mid to high threes. If you're talking really shallow leagues, like we mentioned earlier, 10-team ESPNers, there's not a lot of wiggle room off of who you drafted unless you picked up like a Jones or a Skeens or Crochet or Flaherty or somebody earlier in the year. But if you are talking anything outside of those standard leagues, 12-teamers even, I think Zach Littell is very, very solid. You know, every time out, you essentially know you're going to get 5 or 6 innings. Usually, 5, 6. Sometimes he's gone 7 innings. 2 earned runs, somewhere in the 5 strikeout neighborhood. Really consistent arm that I think is going to be a solid asset, and he feels very much disrespected at just 25% on Yahoo. He's walked 16 batters in 91 and a third innings, and Tampa's starting to pick things up offensively as well. So I think we're in for a really nice second half from Littell. If you are in anything outside of those really shallow leagues, I think that you should be taking a look at him. Let's talk about Zidane Rafaela. It had been a tough couple of weeks. He redeemed himself yesterday with a 3-run homer in Miami. He's on pace for at least a 2020 season, and if you look at all the various projection systems that are out there on Fangraphs, the BAT, ATC, Zips, all of those different systems, and if you're not familiar with them, if you go to Fangraphs, you click on a player page, their career numbers are listed with the white background. Like looking at Rafaela, you'll see Boston 2018, Boston 2019, and then in green below the player's seasons, you will see because it'll say level, and where you see ROS, rest of season, those are projections from Steamer, from Zips, from ATC, from the BAT. I always reference them, but I guess I should have said, in case anybody's not familiar with them or where to find them, you click on anybody's name on Fangraphs, and you will be able to find them there. And if you go to the actual like dashboard, there is a projections tab, and you can look at everybody as a whole instead of just individual players. But anyway, with Zidane Rafaela, he's got 9 homers, 10 steals, and a .244 batting average to this point in the season. 40 runs and 44 ribbies are also doing a lot of damage there for you. In a good way, doing a lot of damage in a good way. If you look at the rest of season projections, he's expected to hit anywhere from .249 to .256, so that's a slight increase generally. And we're just past the halfway point now, but he's projected to play another 69 or 70 games, giving you another 8 or 9 homers, 10 or 11 stolen bases, while essentially doubling up those run and RBI totals. So what we're looking at here, if you look at season to date plus rest of season projections, even just doing a rough average in your head, because they're not drastically different here, you're looking at about 18 or 19 home runs with low 20 stolen bases, somewhere in the 80 run and 80 to 85 RBI range with about a .250 batting average. That is incredibly valuable stuff. And that's not even factoring in the potential for growth as a top prospect who is still getting his feet wet in the big leagues and is just 23 years old. I think that there is a lot to really like about Zidane Rafaela. And you add in the shortstop outfield eligibility, which is pretty damn rare. You don't see that combination very often. I think he deserves a spot on just about every roster. We saw quite a few drops after a cold stretch from him. Felt kind of premature. You see him at the home run yesterday, and okay, it's one home run. But he is really, really such a capable offensive player. I know, and even defensively as well. His defense is very good. But if you are talking about the batting average, the strikeout rate, I understand those concerns. But I don't think it's something where you have to be like, well, he's always going to be a 26% strikeout rate guy. He's been lower than that in the minors. I don't expect the walk rate to really be that high. But in terms of the strikeouts, it's projected to go down. If you look at what he's done throughout his life, it has generally been lower than this. And I think that as he continues to get used to the big leagues, we will see that go down to a more acceptable 23-24% range as opposed to 26. And then you'll start to see that batting average tick up a little bit. Growth is not linear for prospects. They can struggle. They can go down. They can blow up unexpectedly. You never really know what's going to happen. But considering he's kind of hit the ground running this season, at least as a fantasy asset, there are a couple of holes real life-wise, sure. But from a fantasy point of view, he's doing a lot for you. He's a very well-rounded asset, and I don't think you should be letting him sit on really any waiver wires at this point. Let's talk George Springer. He's been one of the hottest players in baseball over the past week. We've talked about him a little bit on the show. I've written him up a few times over on my Patreon, just talking about the different declining metrics we've seen from him. And he goes and he's the number three player for the last week, which is nice to see as a Blue Jays fan and gives you some hope. 4 runs, 3 homers, 11 ribbies, and a stolen base over the last week. 9 for his last 20. But at the same time, I don't really believe it's more than just a little hot stretch for George. If you look at those season-long numbers, and the one that really stands out, and we've mentioned this a few times, I've written about it a few times, I can't remember if I've talked about it a few times yet, but that is the max exit velocity, and even the average exit velocity that kind of tell you a damning story with George Springer. Every year of his career, he's hit a ball at least 113.6 miles an hour, and that 113.6 was kind of the low point already. Because every other year it was 114, 115.9, 116.4. This guy has hit the shit out of the baseball for the majority of his career. He's been a power hitter. I mean, George Springer had a season where he hit 39 home runs. This guy has been a big-time power hitter. The hardest ball he has hit this season is 110.6. It's a drop of more than 5 miles an hour from his hardest hit ball last year. And on average, we're more than a mile per hour down. The barrel rate over the last week with these 4 home runs he's hit in the last couple weeks has moved up that barrel rate now to about the same number it was last year, 7.9%. But it was also already on a pretty drastic decline. George Springer, throughout his time in Houston in that first season in Toronto, 12%, 12%, 9%, 12%, 15%. He's not the same power hitter that he once was. Hard hit rate is down at 35%. He has been in the 40s for most of his career, and even last year was at 39.4. Now it's 35.8. I don't think there's a hell of a lot here. I think if you want to ride out the streak from George Springer, then that's totally fine. I said yesterday that I think that he's really not even worth holding in those shallow leagues, and a couple people were like, well, wouldn't you want to hold him just through like the hot streak at least? Like, yeah, you're not going to drop a guy when he's hitting home runs like he is at this point. But I don't think it's a sustainable thing where you can look at this and say, George is back. You know, he's about to turn 35 years old, but he's turned back the clock and he's going to start doing those things that we expected a couple years ago when Toronto signed him. I think that maybe he gets the 20 homers, maybe, but even that would kind of be pushing it as far as my expectations. I think it's probably 16 or 17. He's been stealing a little more over the last couple seasons, which has been nice for fantasy managers to kind of get a little bit more value out of him as he declines, but the batting average isn't good. He's not at the top of the order anymore. There's a lot working against him, and the main one, I think, is just Father Time. George Springer is going to continue to decline as he gets older, and we have seen that these last couple of seasons. The lineup around him as well, like we've talked about the Blue Jays lineup already today, it's garbage. And batting fifth or sixth in that lineup, it's tough to have value even at the top of that order. But once you're talking about five, six in the order, there's just not a lot there. I don't think that he is somebody you need to hold in shallow leagues. If you are playing in a 10-teamer or in one of those standard 12-teamers where you roster 3 outfielders, I don't think George Springer is really going to cut it. Maybe you hold on and you wait till the streak to cool down. Maybe you get another couple homers out of it. But I really think that this is just a nice little stretch that doesn't really indicate anything going forward for George Springer, unfortunately. I'd love to tell you that he's back, but I don't think that we can really say that. If we see this sustained over a few weeks and those numbers really start to turn around, maybe that's a different conversation. But we're not talking about a small sample size at this point. It's 79 games of pretty rough stuff for Springer outside of the last four or five. So let's not let that cloud our judgment. Let's not be victims of the moment, prisoners of the moment. I think that we need to kind of look at it as a whole and say it's a nice little run, but George is still pretty firmly in the decline phase of his career. Let's talk Brenton Doyle. I've driven myself absolutely nuts between Brenton Doyle and Ryan O'Hearn. These guys, I don't know why they are not universally owned, especially Brenton Doyle. O'Hearn, I can kind of get it why he's not universally owned. Brenton Doyle, I think it's the stupidest thing maybe of the whole fantasy season. Up and down on Yahoo, up and down, up and down. He goes 0 for 4 twice in a row, and then somebody draw. And then not even somebody, like thousands of people drop him. Brenton Doyle is a top 55 player for the season as a whole, and he's on 68% of rosters. It was 65 when I put my notes together last night. He's one of the more popular ads today because yesterday he homered, and the day before that it was two homers and a steal, and people are thinking, oh, shit, what did I miss out on here? You're missing out on a borderline top 50 player who has 49 runs, 10 homers, 32 ribbies, and 20 steals while hitting .264. Granted, the lineup he's in stinks. There's no question about it. But playing in Colorado does offset that, especially he's generally a guy at the top of the order. They move him down to seventh for a game, and he hits two home runs. He's going to be back at the top of the order in the next couple days. There's no question about it. He's an incredible fantasy asset. He's done amazing things this season. I just wish I drafted more of him. I only have him on two of my 14 teams. He's been brilliant, and he's already exceeded what he did last season in terms of total production in like 100 fewer at-bats. It's just really, really impressive stuff from Brenton Doyle. And if he is sitting out there because somebody with an itchy trigger finger wanted to drop him for a streaming spot or for whoever, I wouldn't hesitate to pick him up. Even in the shallowest of leagues, Brenton Doyle is a absolute must-roster fantasy player. There's no question about it. Let's talk Jackson Churio. He has completely turned his season around, and over the last month, he's about a top 50 overall player. It was very tricky to analyze a guy like him. First of all, 20 years old, you never really know what's going to happen for a 20-year-old getting their first shot at the big league. Sometimes they hit the ground running. Sometimes they're awful. It was really good to start, really went into a bit of a downturn there, and then he's really, really picked things up as of late to the point where the overall season line is very good. The thing that you can kind of complain about is the on-base percentage a little bit at .292, but he has a .248 batting average with 36 runs, 9 homers, 34 ribbies, and 9 stolen bases. He's doing that in half a season at age 20. Incredible speed, solid raw power. He's not getting overmatched at the plate. If you look at strikeout and walk rates, they're very, very average, which maybe like a lot of people, I think, have kind of skewed expectations, especially of rookies. Like you see a guy like Wyatt Langford and you see guys like Churio come up and they're essentially doing just like league average strikeout and walk numbers. Those are incredible feats for guys of their ages, especially. I mean, Churio's 20 years old. I think Langford is 21, so it makes a bit of a difference. But when these guys are able to do that at this age, it just kind of blows you away and makes you think about how great they could be in the future. If these guys, Langford's 22, not 21. But if these guys are able to come up and, you know, there are going to be some struggles. This is the thing that drives me crazy. It's like a guy has a couple of bad weeks or something and people write him off. There are people who have already written off Jackson Holliday. There are people who saw he went 0 for 20 or whatever it was and he had a 50% strikeout rate and they probably sold him in Dynasty and just really, you know, going back to the Brenton Doyle thing, just overreactive stuff. But if you just look at the whole picture with Jackson Churio, I know he's been kind of an up-and-down guy in terms of roster rates this season, but in half a year at age 20, he's on pace for a 2020 season with a .250 or so batting average, really solid counting stats, not going to blow you away type of counting stats, but like 70 runs and maybe 65, 70 ribbies. And again, to go back to the Rafaela point, we can't even rule out further growth. We're talking about a top-tier prospect here. If he starts to steal more bases, because, I mean, he stole 43 bases at AA last season, an extra one when he moved up to AAA, so 44 steals in 128 games. Can't rule out him stealing more down the stretch as well. It's the beginning of probably what's going to be an incredible career for Jackson Churio, and I think, you know, I was talking, was it yesterday? Yeah, it would have been on yesterday's show about Wyatt Langford and what he could potentially be going for in 2025 drafts. It's not crazy to think that Churio is going to be right there in that range. If he finishes out his rookie year going 2020 with a .250, .260 batting average, you bet your ass people are going to be paying a serious premium for him. I really, really like the guy, and I think there's a good chance, if you're just looking at overall 2024 production, he ends up as close to a top 100 player. We're about 200 right now overall. and that's with some struggles baked in over the last month. 89th, according to Yahoo, which is not perfect, but it's a good quick thing to reference. 44th over the last 2 weeks, and over the last 7 days, Jackson Churio is the number 7th ranked player. So he is really doing great things for you. I want to see maybe a little more speed. That's kind of the main one. I think the power is, you know, if he hits 20 home runs, it's hard to complain about that. But I'd like to see 20, 25, maybe even 30 stolen bases if things break right. And in that case, he's not going to be a first rounder. He's not going to be a second rounder. But if Churio goes 20 and 25, 250 batting average, 75 runs, 70 ribbies, he's going in like the third round, I think. I think that's a fair assumption. The way that people, like, we at least saw Ellie De La Cruz go in the second this year. CJ Abrams go in the third. Not crazy to think that people are really going to push him up. If you're still seeing him on any shallow league waiver wires, you're probably not. But he was dropped a lot. He went down into the 50s. He's up to 74% now. Do yourself a favor and pick him up wherever you can. Absolutely. No question there. But let's talk about Ryan O'Hearn. I did reference him earlier. I try not to talk about him so much because he has become one of my favorite players, and I don't want to get too repetitive here, but he's still just 49% rostered on Yahoo, despite being a 290 hitter, hitting third every day against righties in that middle of that Baltimore lineup. He's batting third pretty much every single time he takes the field. He batted sixth the other day, which was kind of weird, and he went 3-for-4 and drove in a run. 31 runs, 34 ribbies, 10 homers, 3 stolen bases. This is an incredible asset, and especially in daily change leagues, I think that everybody needs to go and add Ryan O'Hearn, and I feel like a damn broken record, but multiple eligible at first and in the outfield, doing so much for you. Last month, he's hitting 325. If you go at any period of time and you sort by last month, last 2 weeks, last 6 weeks, whatever, Ryan O'Hearn has been really, really good, and I think it's really bad stuff that he's below 50% rostered still. I know we're starting to get into football mode, and people are starting to see, okay, I'm 12th out of 12 teams, I'm going to stop making pickups. But I don't think if you're still listening to a fantasy baseball podcast in June, you are one of those people. Actually, it's not even June anymore. We are into July. If you are still listening to a fantasy baseball podcast in the second half of the season, I think you are probably a fairly active manager. And there's almost certainly somebody on your team who is worse than Ryan O'Hearn or producing quite a bit less and certainly isn't batting third for what is a top five lineup in baseball. So I'm going to not mention Ryan O'Hearn for a while. I don't want to be known as the Ryan O'Hearn guy. I'm probably more known as the Taj Bradley guy at this point. But I think O'Hearn is a really brilliant fantasy asset, and leaving him out there on the wire is honestly really, really foolish as far as I see it. 49% rostered is just not doing him any level of justice. Let's talk about Jose Miranda, who has also been one of my favorite players this season, I think. Last year was really tough. I bought into him in a couple leagues last season, and he was dreadful. And he has really turned his career around. I thought that, you know, he was going to the 700s in drafts this year. People were kind of just done with Jose Miranda. He's batting 296 with a 339 on base, 482 slug, 28 runs, 8 homers, 37 ribbies, and a couple stolen bases as well. Top 100 player over the last 30 days and top 50 in the past 2 weeks. I think considering how weak third base is, he's someone to really be considering in all formats at this point. The roster rate was very low for him for quite a while. We're up to 29% now, and that's going to happen when you're producing the way he is. Top 50 production, even over a two-week span, with that kind of, you know, already a taste of major league success under his belt. I think there is a lot to like here. I was worried a couple of weeks ago about, is he going to play every day, because he wasn't playing every single day for a while. He's been in the lineup for each of the last 6 games. He's batting 4th yesterday, 2nd the day before. Hopefully we see him solidify a spot at the top of that order, but either way, I think Miranda, especially considering how weak third base is, I think you should be getting him while you can. He's a really solid asset who's contributing kind of across the board. Steals not so much, but he does have a couple in there. I think he's a really solid asset at a fairly terrible position overall. But let's move into the most added and dropped players of the night, and we will start with Davis Daniel. He had himself a really nice, I mean, that doesn't even really do it justice, 8 shutout innings against Detroit last week, which I believe was the first start of his career. I wrote this at the time, and I'm now blanking if it was the first major league start for him. Yeah, so he had 3 other appearances, a couple of them last year. There were 3 relief appearances last season, and this was his first major league start, and he was absolutely brilliant against the Tigers, and now we're seeing him face Oakland in Oakland. So He is naturally the most added player of the day. 13,300 people have added him at this point, and we're still about 6 hours out from game time. We're going to see that one hit probably 15K today. So people are still making ads. It's good to see that people are still being active. 13,000 ads for one streaming pitcher on a random Wednesday. It's good to see that people aren't fully lost interest at this point. I think he's a solid arm to deploy. I think in 12 teamers and beyond, it probably makes some sense. But I also don't want to read too much into that one good start and ignore where there are some problems still. If you look at what he did in AAA this season, it's been fine. It's been okay below the surface. On the surface, it's a 5.33 ERA for him with a 1.50 whip. But I don't think he's been quite that bad. The estimators aren't nearly that bad. He's allowed a really high BABIP, really low strand rate. I think he's all right. But I think it's a situation where, do you need it? Do you need the extra innings this week? Do you need an extra potential win? If you're looking at your team right now, like I'm looking at my head-to-head team in my one Yahoo league, and right now we got a 2.25 ERA. I've won three games already. The whip is at one. Maybe I could use him, but I don't need him, you know, especially in those shallow leagues. It gets to a point, I think, where a lot of people are streaming for the sake of streaming, and I don't know that he's necessarily one of those guys, but you just see the matchup and you're like, okay, it's a good matchup, so I'm going to stream him. Does it fit? Do you need it? Do you potentially, are you going to be, you know, just look at how many starts you have left for the week, how many starts the other guy has left, how many pickups he has, who's out on the wire, etc. And does it make sense? Does it make sense to use one of your probably four or five ads of the week or use FAB on a guy who did have a really good start? But how often do we see that happen? Just anecdotally, you see a guy come out there who is kind of an unknown, gives you that kind of massive start, and then do they usually follow it up with another good one? It's kind of a mixed bag there without, you know, looking at data. I don't even know if there is data on that. That's more of just like a personal thing. It feels like whenever you see these guys have a great debut, they tend to come back down to earth a little bit. And even though Oakland does suck, they're still major league hitters. I think there's a good chance it goes fairly well for you, but it's not a situation where I'm tripping over myself to go get him on my team. I think Davis Daniel can be solid, but I think it's like a 12 team and beyond type of play. If you are playing in a shallower league, I think it's fine, but I don't think he's somebody that, like I said, you don't need to go out of your way to be picking him up unless you really need him in those shallow leagues to compete for volume. Somebody that you should be picking up, as far as I see it, is Christian Scott. He is going to be starting tonight. We have seen a ton of ads. He's up 13% on Yahoo this week. He had 6,100 ads as of the time of recording this. Probably see that continue to push up. I really like the underlying skills of Christian Scott. I've talked a lot about how he was the guy that I probably spent the most money on in FAB this season. In a few leagues, I was spending 25 to 30%. And I think even one league, it might have been like 31, 32% of my FAB. He was really solid. A 390 ERA with solid underlying numbers. Really good walk rate this year at the big league level. He didn't strike out as many batters as he did in the minors, but during that adjustment phase, most guys don't. Most guys do come down from that 30% plus number. They go to like 20-something in their first season, and then maybe they get to 24, 25. I don't think he'll be a 30% strikeout rate guy in the big leagues, but I think Christian Scott does have ace kind of written all over him here. When we did that show with James Anderson, which was the beginning of last week, I believe. Was it 2 weeks ago now? No, I think it was last week with James. And if you're not familiar with James, he is probably the smartest prospect mind in the industry. He's on the Mount Rushmore, essentially, of fantasy prospects / dynasty minds. And he was really, really excited about the future for Christian Scott. Looking ahead to next year, I think he's a really, really awesome draft target. And looking at it for tonight, I think that he's an amazing streamer against a team like the Nationals. The question I have is, will he be in the rotation going forward? Is he going to be somebody that starts another 15 games in the season, another 12 games this season? I'm not sure how the Mets are going to use him. Just looking at the pure talent, looking at the other arms in that rotation, I'd think that it would be very smart of them to just let him pitch, especially with the team kind of coming alive now to some extent. They look pretty solid. The Grimace Mets have kind of turned their season around. And the pitching has been, I mean, not great. They sent down Tyler McGill the other day. David Peterson is not somebody you can really trust. I don't know how much you trust Jose Quintana, who is okay, but there are a lot of risks with him. He has been pretty decent as of late, but it's still for the season for Quintana. It's like a 4-something ERA, 4.57 ERA. Manaea has been better as of late. Severino is a little bit iffy, but this is a rotation that I think could use a guy like Christian Scott on a regular basis. It would make sense of them to just keep him up and see what they got. And I don't know if we're going to see that just based on their usage and based on the patterns we've seen with him this season. I think he's an ad for now, and then we evaluate what happens in the coming days and we see if they're going to keep him around. But if you don't add him now, the odds are you're never going to be able to. Like, we got the notification that he was recalled. They confirmed that he was going to start earlier in the week, but he didn't actually, you never know. Like, until the guy's actually on the big league roster, you never really know. But he was actually, like, recalled this morning, and we're seeing just a ton of ads. So, again, it was like the James Wood situation. If you want him, you get him now, or else you're never going to be able to have a chance at Christian Scott. I would be picking him up because I think the pedigree here and the potential potentially what you could see down the stretch could be very, very, very appealing from a fantasy point of view. And I think next year is really the sweet spot. Once we're kind of not seeing as many restrictions on him, he probably breaks the team at a camp. Don't know how much draft hype there is going to be around him, but I don't think it'll be enough. I think Christian Scott is really, really good and will be good for years to come. Let's talk about Nathaniel Lowe, Nate Lowe. I called him, I believe, Nate Lowe in my write-up yesterday. He is the number one player over the last week. He has four home runs this past week, and he had two coming into this week before. I think he's okay for deeper league players. Don't know how much I'm really fully bought in here, in all honesty. I think it's the first base thing. First base is just so deep. If you are playing in a 10 or a 12 teamer, you're running out a really good first baseman every single day, right? Like, just going through the first base rankings, we have Bryce Harper, who is currently hurt, so maybe that's a thing where you pick up, you pick him up to kind of replace Bryce Harper in the interim. But then you have Freddie Freeman, you have Bohm, you have Naylor, you have Walker, Guerrero, Santander, Alonso, Steer, Sal Perez, Alec Burleson, Vinny Pasquantino, Cody Bellinger. Like, are we really? And that's not even talking about like the Matt Olsons and the Goldschmidts of the world who are going to be rostered because they're going to be rostered, even though they're not doing a hell of a lot for you. They're not going to be guys who are going to get dropped, right? Obviously, especially with Matt Olson. With Goldschmidt, you could actually maybe have the drop conversation, but you're not having with Olson or really anybody else on this list. So I think when you're looking at it from that perspective, where am I going to play him? If you have a free utility spot that you want to put Nathaniel Lowe into, then that's fine. I don't know that he really justifies that. If you want to like stream him in again while he is on a bit of a tear and see, hope that he can kind of keep it up, then that's fine. But I also don't think this is going to sustain itself for terribly long. I don't know that the power is really there anymore. It was kind of there for a season. He had 27 homers in 2022 and then 17 last season. The barrel rates, hard hits have been coming down over the last couple of years. So maybe this is a 15 home run guy who hits for a decent batting average in a decent lineup. I think he's okay, but I definitely do shade more towards the deeper leagues with Nathaniel Lowe. If you do have those corner infield extra utility spots, that's where I'd be more interested as opposed to just a standard league where you start one first baseman. I think there it's going to be very tricky to get him onto your roster.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
This is one where people are asking for trouble a little bit. This is Colin Ray going into Coors Field for a start against Colorado. He has been pretty solid as a whole this season on the surface. 3.61 ERA. I don't think anybody was expecting that from Colin Ray, but it's one of those type of, I don't want to put him in the same category necessarily, but it's kind of like James Paxton and Tyler Anderson this season. He does not deserve that at all. The guy doesn't strike anybody out. 16.8% strikeout rate. And the walk rate is 7.6, which is fine, but if you're striking out that few batters, then you need to be really, really limiting the walks to like a Zach Littell type of level. It's a 9.2 strikeout minus walk. It's a 4.60 xFIP, a 5.30 expected ERA, and a 4.64 Sierra. Starting him in Coors feels like you're chasing the tail end of what's been a pretty nice streak with one or two stinkers mixed in there, and hoping for the best, which maybe happens. But again, it's one of those desperation type of plays. And on a Wednesday, middle of the week, head-to-head, this is one that could actually just ruin your week with Colin Ray. I don't think he's a particularly good pitcher. I think he's had some success this year, but the chances of it sustaining don't feel that great. And especially going into Coors, that just seems like a recipe for disaster here. Let's talk about Dean Kramer. He was activated off of the shelf. He is going to be starting today for Baltimore against Seattle, activated from that 10-day injured list. I believe it was this morning or maybe yesterday where he had the triceps problem that they brought him back from. He'd been pretty solid, not anything to write home about really, 4.32 ERA. 1.12 whip is solid, 49 strikeouts and 50 innings is solid. Looking at the matchup, it's about as appealing as it can get right now. Seattle is literally batting Julio Rodriguez seventh. There's nobody batting ahead of him that even deserves it really. It's just because Julio has just been so bad. It's really a dreadful offense, and it's a dreadful, dreadful park in Seattle for hitters. So you're getting that little bit of an advantage as well. Kramer, I think, could be all right, depending on how far they let him go. I haven't heard, and I was trying to find something before the show, about a potential innings limit. Haven't seen anything about innings or pitches that the team has said, like he'll be limited to 80 pitches, he'll be limited to 5 innings or whatever. But you have to assume coming off of a triceps injury and the way that Baltimore has lost a bunch of pitching this year, they're going to be a little more cautious. Probably 5 innings, 80 pitches is about as much as you're going to hope for. But against Seattle, that could be 7 strikeouts. That could be a really, really nice outing from Dean Kramer. Not the biggest strikeout guy in the world, but Seattle strikes out. It's a historic rate. Like somebody posted it, maybe it was Chris Towers or somebody a few weeks ago, about like highest single season strikeout rates for a team. Seattle was like third all time. Like, this is a team that you're sending me out there, I might be able to get one or two strikeouts off of these guys. It's really gotten to a bad, bad point. So Dean Kramer, I think, is a fine enough streamer that you're starting him there. And maybe you get lucky. Maybe Dean Kramer is able to actually, you know, live up to that low whip that we saw earlier in the season and give you like a high threes ERA, 1.15 type of whip, pitching for a good team. There's a chance he ends up as a back-end 12-team guy, but for right now, I think that he's just solely a streamer. We see how he looks coming off of quite a lengthy stay on the shelf. He's been gone since May 20th, so we're talking about a little over about 6 weeks at this point, so we'll see how he responds. There's a chance it ends well. There's a chance that it doesn't, but I think he's a pickup for this start tonight in a lot of cases. Gavin Williams is going to be finally making his first start of the season. I really like Gavin Williams. I do worry about these elbow problems that don't get resolved through Tommy John surgery. We've talked about this so much this season, and we've seen the results of it. I mean, just recently with his own teammate, with Tristan McKenzie, who had to get sent down to AAA because of how awful he'd been, and in large part because he's pitching through an elbow injury. The skill level of Gavin Williams is that of a potential ace going forward. I don't think there's any real question about that. The pedigree here is incredible. He's pitching in a fantastic pitching organization for the most part. But I just worry about him staying healthy. Now, he's facing the White Sox tonight. That's a really, really nice way to ease into your season. And I just worry about how many starts we're going to see down the stretch here. Cleveland's a very good team this year. I wonder if they feel there's any need to push him, if there's any problems at all. In this situation, considering the injury goes back to, I forget if it was it late last year, early this season, but I would almost rather these guys just undergo some kind of procedure and get it out of the way, as opposed to delaying and delaying and then hopefully avoiding the surgery later on. I think, honestly, DeGrom just scarred me, thinking that, okay, guys can pitch through this and they're going to be okay. And then it was like, what, 20 innings for DeGrom? And I know he's not the same as everybody, but generally speaking, you see these guys who are pitching through elbow injuries, it doesn't really end that well for them. Look at Kyle Bradish, look at Tristan McKenzie, just as recent cases. It's why I worry about Gerrit Cole staying healthy. So, yeah, he's a pickup for now, but he's definitely somebody that I worry about rest of season. If we see Gavin Williams come out and shove against the White Sox, might be a little ambitious to try and trade him right after that. But you see two or three good outings like we saw from Kyle Bradish. Kyle Bradish came back. He was brilliant, and then he ended up having to undergo the surgery. We see the same kind of pattern from Williams where he's good for a few starts. It is a risk you take. Maybe he's able to stay healthy and maintain it. The odds would tell you that it's probably not that likely that he's, A, going to come back at full strength in terms of his production, and also that he'll be able to just avoid surgery forever based on the elbow problem. So I like him a lot, and I think the potential is really there for a future ace, but for right now, my expectations are in check. That being said, I'd stream my grandmother against the White Sox. There's really nobody that you're that scared of in that lineup at all, so I think that that's a totally fine situation if you wanted to pick him up for today. Brenton Doyle, like we mentioned, he's among the popular ads, as well as Jose Miranda. There's an interesting pitcher being added here. We talked about it last week, and it's Brian Bayo. This one is tricky. He's been so awful. I personally started him myself in one weekly lineup, 15-team league, simply because of the matchup. He's facing Miami. I think that Brian Bayo is pretty, pretty bad at this point. He is really unraveled throughout this season. His last month plus have been really awful after a few good starts early on. Looked like we were going to have a nice little win there with Brian Bayo this season, but it's been dreadful. This is kind of the last straw here. If I see anything that's not perfection out of this Miami outing, I'm dropping him absolutely everywhere, even in 15-team leagues. Right now, I don't think he warrants a spot on 10- and 12-team rosters, although if you want to stream him for the Miami game, I don't blame you there. But if I see 5 earned, 4 walks tonight or some bullshit along those lines from Brian Bayo, it might not be me getting rid of him. It might be the Red Sox setting him back down to AAA, because we're already at a 5.55 ERA and a 1.47 whip. If you cannot get through the goddamn Marlins, then it's going to be a problem. Toronto really got to him. The White Sox got to him. The Tigers have gotten to him this season. St. Louis, a lot of really subpar teams. This is the last straw. If Bayo isn't able to do anything tonight, then I think it's curtains for him in all formats. Let's move on to the drops. Jose Soriano is the top drop. He allowed 3 hits, struck out 4 with 1 walk in 4 innings against the Athletics. I was a little bit worried about what they would let him do in terms of innings, in terms of pitches. He really wasn't that great. I mean, the first couple innings went all right for him, and then Brent Rooker hit a home run, Lawrence Butler hit a home run. 62 pitches, 39 of them were strikes. Maybe he's just still building up. I think if you are in those shallow formats, not maybe he's still building up, he is still kind of building up here. I know it was an abdomen problem, an abdomen infection, which I thought was kind of strange. I missed that. I thought it was just like, I don't really know what I thought was wrong with the abdomen, but I didn't think it was an infection. I thought it was like he hit it or something. But in any event, he's still building up after missing a decent stretch of time there. He missed close to a month, 3-plus weeks. I think in shallow leagues, it's totally fine to cut him. But if you are in a 15-teamer, I think there are brighter days ahead for Soriano. Not that he's like in the must-roster category, But I think if I'm dropping him in a 15-teamer, it better be for something pretty decent, because I think that Soriano can be a pretty productive arm going forward. What we've seen so far this season, the strikeouts haven't been great. 3.77 ERA, 1.17 whip, even with yesterday's stinker included in the mess. So I think it would be a little premature to cut him in deep leagues, but in shallow formats, I don't have any problem with it. Spencer Arrighetti, he is done. We're done. We're done, folks. He got destroyed by the Blue Jays, and that is about as much as you need to see here. Blue Jays, White Sox, Marlins, a lot of the time, that's pretty much all you need to see. I can't believe I just put the Blue Jays in that same category, but 6 runs, 6 hits, 4 walks. He did strike out 5 batters, but we're looking at 69 innings of a 6.13 ERA and a 1.65 whip. Yeah, it was kind of more than optimistic. He went 7 shutout and struck out 10 against the Rockies his last outing. I was kind of worried about this being a case of it was a bad team. Of course, he did well, and then things are going to come back down to earth for you, because in the previous 2 starts, White Sox and Detroit, 2 pretty terrible teams, and he was awful against both of them. Really, it's hard to find that many great starts from Arrighetti. There have been a couple of decent ones, but I think we're past the point of like looking to the expected stats and saying he's going to turn it around. He's getting blown up by awful teams, and I think there's only so long Houston is going to be able to stand this in the rotation. They're trying to get into the playoffs this year. Their early start to the season really set them back, and now Houston's record right now is 43-42. They're 3 back in the West, and they are currently 3 back in the wild card. They're not the typical Astros, who have 60 wins at this point of the season already. They need quality innings down the stretch, and Arrighetti, I think, is in a serious risk of being sent down, put in the pen, or whatever the case is. Excuse me. I don't see him really providing much of anything going forward for fantasy managers. I think that this is a pretty clear drop in all, but if you're playing a 30-team league or something, maybe it's different. Pretty much all formats. Spencer Arrighetti, he can get the hell out of here and hit the waiver wire. Let's talk Simeon Woods Richardson. I didn't think he was that bad, but he is the 3rd most dropped player of the day. In fact, he wasn't bad at all, really. 3 runs, 4 hits, a couple of walks, over 5 2/3. He's proven to have a fairly high floor as a major league starting pitcher. 3.52 ERA, 1.13 whip, 60 strikeouts in 71 2/3 innings. I think that he's really solid, and I think that if you are talking a 12-teamer, he's like a back-end arm in a 12-teamer as far as I see it. The blow-ups are not terribly bad. The highs are not terribly high for him either. You're not really seeing like 7 shutout with 10 strikeouts from Woods Richardson. But that floor is really important, especially the deeper you get. If you are talking anything 12 teams and deeper, especially we're straying towards those expanded 12-teamers with extra pitching spots or whatever, I think that he is really worth a spot there, and he's only on 20% of rosters. It's heading downwards today. I don't really get it. Another situation where if you're dropping him, it should be a very shallow league, or it should be for somebody who is like a can't-miss type of guy. If you're dropping him for like a Taj Bradley type, or if you're dropping him for Zach Littell, for certain names, it's understandable for sure. But I think what he's doing is kind of underrated, especially in those slightly deeper formats. We got a bad update on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. We talked yesterday about how he had gone on the injured list. Yesterday evening, there was an announcement that he is more week-to-week as opposed to this is going to be a minimum stint on the injured list. No timetable. It is a right knee sprain. This is a situation where he is a drop pretty much everywhere, unless you do have, of course, free IL space, which if you do, rub your lucky rabbit's foot. I don't know how you do, but I think most of us are in a situation where we have probably one player who's just not even, like, who is injured, who is just sitting on our bench because there's just no room for them at this point. With a guy like IKF, who had been kind of overperforming a little bit, doing things that we don't expect from him, and a bad lineup, you factor in the injury, I think that he's a pretty clear drop. If you do have the free space, then it's fine, but I think he's a drop. David Hamilton, this one is brutal. I mean, it looked like he was, and I declared it myself, feeling really stupid right now. I said he's probably the pickup of the year, but he's not playing anymore. Boston has sat him pretty regularly over the last week or so. He's become more of a platoon bat. I believe he sat against a right-handed pitcher the other day. It's not great. They're playing Emmanuel Valdez a lot more as of late, and I think, honestly, in shallow leagues, it might be done. Like, this might have just been a really nice stretch where if you got him into your lineup, you got 20-plus stolen bases. You were getting a great batting average there for a while, but it didn't last. He wasn't able to maintain the playing time. Boston is messing around a little bit. I don't know. I don't really understand Boston's, like, yeah, we're not going to play him every day, but then when we play him, he's top of the order. That never made sense to me when you see that kind of platooning going on. He's not worthy of playing against lefties, but against righties, he'll bat second. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me personally. But at this point, I think in most cases, he's somebody you send back to the waiver wire. If you're talking deeper leagues, probably hold on, give him another week and see if he's able to get that playing time back. But I think in most cases, David Hamilton is probably a drop. 10 and 12 team leagues, you got to churn and burn to keep up. And I think that it's just not a situation where he's going to be giving you that much. But if you are talking anything slightly deeper where there's less available replacement value on the wire, you probably hold on for a week or so and just see, because if he starts playing again, things could turn around, because this was not expected to begin with. You never really know what's going to happen with these type of players. It could be next week where he steals another five bases for you and gets back in the lineup every single day. But I think we're trending towards an all formats drop at this point. We're trending towards, but we're not fully there where I'm saying drop him everywhere. But we have seen him go from 67 down to 54% on Yahoo over the last few days. The last one we will talk about is Jordan Montgomery. This is just out of hand at this point. He's on the injured list with knee inflammation, and he has a 6.44 ERA, 1.68 WHIP. There's a lot of people talking online about, like, is this something that we got to blame Scott Boras for holding out on these players for the entire offseason, and then they signed later on, and we've seen it with Snell, we've seen it with Montgomery. They're getting hurt, and I don't know how much I want to attribute it to Scott Boras. I think that it's just a tricky landscape of trying to hold out for the best deal for your guy, and in turn, that best deal for your guy turns into more money for the agent. So there's a lot of reasons why these guys want to hold out financially, and even just career-wise, you want to, you know, take your time and pick the best spot, whatever. So I'm not sure how much I blame it on Boras. But with Jordan Montgomery, there's no point holding out here. There's no real production you've been getting at all. I think he kind of got lucky capitalizing on a career stretch right as he was entering into a contract year. But overall, he's been a pretty mediocre pitcher for his career. He's been pretty solid. But in terms of fantasy value, he was never a big strikeout guy. The team context is not great. The ratios have been just disgusting. And now we got an injury to go along with it. I think Jordan Montgomery, for me, is a pretty easy drop in all formats. Even in those deeper leagues, I just don't think he's really going to give you a hell of a lot. But that will do it, guys. We will wrap up there. I really appreciate everybody who has come and found the show now through the first 40 episodes. A lot of fun. We're going to be at 50 in a couple weeks, and then pretty soon we'll be into the hundreds like we were on the old feed. I think it was 555 on the old feed or 557. Lots of podcasting out of me. I guess we're just about at the 600 total shows hosted mark, which is kind of cool. But if you guys want to keep up with what I got going on, JoeOrico99 over on the Twitter. That's where I post out all of my new stuff. And I would very much appreciate a rating and review if you guys haven't done so already. I saw that there were a bunch of reviews that came in over the last week. I think we're up to 68 or 70 reviews or so, something somewhere in that neighborhood, which has been great to see. All the support really does help out the algorithm. So thank you very much if you have done that. If you haven't, take a couple seconds, slide down to the bottom of the page, hit that 5-star, leave a couple of kind words. It really does go a long way. But I will leave it there. Enough rambling out of me for one day. We'll be back again tomorrow, breaking down Wednesday's slate and talking about the big news and notes of the day. But until then, everybody, take care and have a great night.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.